pleased to be joined with my colleagues Steve Chu and Lisa Jackson today. This is an important day for rural America. It's an important day for all of America. The President has signed and executed a memorandum directing the three agencies on this call, the USDA, Department of Energy, and the EPA, to work in concert in an interagency working group to focus and to create an opportunity for the biofuels industry to be an integral part of the American 21st century clean economy. I'm excited about this opportunity because the President has directed us to create a comprehensive biofuel marketing development program to focus on the infrastructure that will be necessary for this industry to be a permanent part of the American economy and to do it in a sustainable way. He has set a very aggressive timetable for USDA in terms of the work that we must do to accelerate investment in new biofuel opportunities, from focusing on additional resources for biorefineries to allowing existing biorefineries to convert to renewable fuel and away from fossil fuel, to a bioenergy program that encourages producers to produce the feedstocks, the new feedstocks that will be developed over time, to an opportunity for communities to convert as well. This memorandum, in my view, reflects President Obama's commitment to rural America. It merges and marries together rural economic development with agriculture to create clean jobs and clean opportunity. It is a firm commitment and making this industry an integral part of this new 21st century American economy the President has talked about. It provides additional income opportunities for American farmers and ranchers, jobs for those who live in rural communities, and energy security for every single American. We are prepared to accept the challenge that the President has put before us to begin working with the existing industry to restructure investments that have already been made, so that the infrastructure that's in place can be maintained. And we look forward to working with our colleagues to develop creative ways to grow this industry. And we will meet the deadline set by the President in instituting the energy title, the Farm Bill, and the various provisions. Again, I look forward to working with Steve and Lisa. This is an exciting opportunity for USDA, which is an everyday, every way department. And this is just another example of our willingness to work in an integrated and coordinated fashion. Christina, with that, I'd be happy to turn it over to the next speaker.
Great. Administrator Jackson?
Thank you, Christina, and thank you, Tom. It's good to be here this morning with my colleagues, Tom Vilsack and Steve Chu. Good morning to you all. I'm proud to announce that just a few minutes ago, EPA took a major step towards green jobs and energy independence and cleaner air with a proposed rule to increase use of advanced renewable biofuels. In the 2007 Energy Independence and Security Act, or EISA as it's called, Congress recognized the need for a homegrown fuel source. Every year we send billions of dollars overseas, often to unfriendly places. With renewable fuels, we can send those billions to rural and farming communities, people who need help most in these challenging economic times. And energy independence ends our vulnerability to oil price spikes, something we've felt as far back as the 70s. And as recently as last year, our economy is at the mercy of foreign oil producers, and everyone feels that when it hits us at the pump. As India and China demand more oil and supplies level off or decrease, volatile and expensive supply lines are even riskier. So EISA calls for investments in corn-based ethanol, much of it grown in rural America and the Midwest, as well as a swift transition to advanced cellulosic ethanol. The Act calls for 36 billion gallons of renewable fuels in 2022. That is enough to cut petroleum consumption by nearly 11%. EISA also requires that renewable fuels reduce greenhouse gas emissions compared to the fuels they replace. With that measure, we can cut greenhouse gases equivalent to taking 24 million cars off the road. That's protecting human health and the environment at the same time as we improve our security and our economy. This proposal is the product of work with domestic and international partners, with our federal agency family, and with stakeholders in the agricultural community. And most importantly, we're proud of the fact that it's informed by the best science. And to add to that good science, EPA is seeking further peer review. I believe it is important that the public and the scientific community have a chance to examine our strategy. So we'll be soliciting comment from the public over the next 60 days, and we look forward to hearing from all stakeholders as we do so. Working together, we can have true energy independence, put billions of dollars back into our community, and create green jobs for rural communities across the nation. Thank you.
Thank you, Administrator. And Secretary Chu?
Yes. Thank you, Christina. excuse me. I just want to start by saying that if you look at the great resources of the United States, certainly our agricultural resources are one of them. We have incredible capacity not only to grow the food we need and to have a very dynamic export production capability, we can also grow a considerable amount of energy. Since we use one quarter of the world's oil and the use of our oil accounts for greenhouse gas, significant part of greenhouse gas emissions, we're projecting that there will be an increase of 30% through 2030. Our reliance on foreign oil and also the greenhouse gas emissions will grow by nearly 40% if we don't do something. And so in order to transition to a cleaner, sustainable energy economy and to decrease our dependence on foreign oil, this action is totally in line with that. And so I'm pleased to announce today that there will be $786 million invested through the Recovery Act money for the development of advanced biofuels and the expansion of commercial biorefineries. So this funding is intended to look at several areas. It's intended, for example, to look at the demonstration of integrated plants that integrate the production of biofuels, bioproducts, and heat and power into a system that could prove earlier commercial viability. It is also going to be investing money in the increase of existing commercial-scale integrated biorefineries that have been awarded in the last 2 years. It will be adding money to existing Office of Science bioenergy research centers. There are three of them in the United States, and these centers have already shown great new advances. As one example, the centers have already developed yeast and bacteria that can, when fed simple sugars, can produce gasoline and diesel-like fuel. And we're going to create a algae biofuels consortium to accelerate the demonstration of algae biofuels. So these are a number of things that I think will position the United States very well. There has been an Oak Ridge study some years ago that projected a billion tons of agricultural waste and crops specifically designed for energy could be available and have minimal impact on our food production. If you transfer that billions of tons of agricultural material into what we expect in ethanol, that corresponds to something on the order of 100 billion gallons of ethanol. That would go a long way to wiping out our need to import oil. So it's a very exciting opportunity. The research will lead the way in giving us much better options on how do you get very sustainable biofuels as we transition away from corn, a good start, but certainly these more advanced biofuels are going to be much appreciated environmentally. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary. Operator, we're ready to take questions.
Great. Thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your touch-tone phone. You'll hear a tone indicating you've been placed in queue, and you may remove yourself from queue by pressing the pound key. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up your handset before pressing the star, then 1. So again, if you do have a question, please press star, then 1 on your phone at this time. And our first question comes from the line of Ian Talley with Dow Jones. Please go ahead.
Just a couple clarifying questions. One, you mentioned a deadline, Secretary Vilsack. What is that deadline? Secondly, on the biofuels, considering the entire fuel cycle, does that relegate corn ethanol, corn-based ethanol, to being a dirtier fuel? Will that no longer be necessary? Can you just give some details on what the rule announces along those regards in those terms?
Well, first of all, let me respond to the first part of the question, and certainly would ask Administrator Jackson to weigh in on the second part. The President has indicated a desire and interest in developing a comprehensive approach, and in order to accelerate that approach, he is interested in getting the investments that are required under the energy title of the Farm Bill into the process, into the economy as quickly as possible. So he has instructed USDA within 30 days to essentially trigger and get into the process the various programs that have been identified by the Farm Bill. There is over $1.1 billion of opportunity here created by the Congress to assist in building biorefineries, in helping existing refineries convert from fossil fuel power to renewable power, create opportunities for producers to receive assistance to produce new cellulosic crops and product, provide for opportunities for producers to look at their own operations to see how they might be able to convert to renewable sources and to utilize different sources than fossil fuel, and also to provide opportunities for communities to take advantage of renewable energy and renewable fuel. All of these things he has instructed us to get into the process and basically make funds available within the next 30 days. We are prepared to meet that aggressive deadline. He has also asked us to immediately take our credit programs and see if there are ways in which we can assist existing facilities who are currently stressed to restructure their investments and their financing in a way that gives them additional time to get through these difficult times. And we are also prepared to take action on that request as well. Finally, the President has suggested the need for us to go further than just simply creating research projects that Steve talked about, environmental direction and regulatory direction that Lisa talked about, and the resources and grants and loans that I just talked about. He's suggesting that we need to work in concert with the industry to figure out how we might be able to do a better job of creating a market for these biofuels that we're going to produce, how we might be able to increase the use of flexible fuel vehicles in this country, how we might be able to assist those who market these fuels to be able to do so and encourage more consumer interest, and to coordinate the infrastructure that's necessary and to do all of this in a sustainable way. So this is a very aggressive directive from the President, which I think is consistent with his intent to create clean opportunities and green opportunities in rural America. As it relates to corn, let me say that I am certainly pleased with the effort that EPA has undertaken to comply with the law and to do it in a way in which they seek assistance and review from in terms of the evaluations and formulas. I think it is a good sign that EPA is interested in listening. They want to get this right. They have worked really hard on this, but they want to make sure that they've got it right. So, Lisa, if you'd like to comment on the impact on corn, I'm happy to invite you to do so.
Absolutely so. I think the only things I would add, Tom, is that the proposed rulemaking for the renewable fuel standard, as I said, implements ISA, the law. There are 15 billion gallons of ethanol grandfathered in under ISA, and one would expect that that's going to come from corn. And, you know, as the President has said, and as I think this rulemaking advances, corn-based ethanol is a bridge. It's an extraordinarily important bridge, but it is a bridge to the next generation of biofuels and other ethanols. And so we look forward to, through this rulemaking and through the work group, through the task force, the working group, working on exactly that.
And I might say, in addition to that, that part of the cellulosic material that might be looked at in the future is the corn stover, the waste product from the corn production process. So that is another opportunity for producers to profit. But it is by no means the only way to do this. And what the President wants, and I think it's the right thing, is for all of rural America to be able to participate. So you'll be looking at woody biomass. You'll be looking at municipal waste. You'll be looking at a series of algae. You'll be looking at a series of things that can be created in all parts of the country. in order to get us to a point where we're more energy secure than we are today, and to create the kinds of jobs that can't be outsourced, the kinds of jobs that have to be created in rural communities across the country.
Great. Thank you very much. And can we find this somewhere online, the rule? I'm having difficulty finding it.
The rule will be posted online later today.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks. And we have a question now from the line of Philip Rasher with the Des Moines Register. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Administrator Jackson, I would like you to be a little more specific about your two-part question on the impact of this RFS, this rule on biodiesel and ethanol, corn ethanol. First of all, in terms of biodiesel, will biodiesel made from vegetable oils, particularly soybean oil, be able to meet the greenhouse gas reduction requirement in ISA? And in terms of corn ethanol, for those plants that are not grandfathered in by the law, will they be able to meet the, I believe it's a 20% reduction, will they be able to meet that? Could you address those two issues specifically?
Sure. Under the proposed rule, the total volume of renewable fuel ramps up to a maximum of 36 billion gallons by 2022. And so that would, following the requirements in the law, the program would then result in a billion gallons of biomass-based diesel fuel, 16 billion gallons of cellulosic biofuel, and 21 billion gallons of advanced biofuel. I think that was your first question, but I didn't quite understand your second question.
No, that was not my question at all. I know what the schedule is. My question is, under the greenhouse gas reduction requirements, as you mentioned earlier, for all of these fuels in comparison to the fuels they're replacing, my question has to do with the analysis that you've done in this rule, and would biodiesel from vegetable oil sources, particularly soybean oil, be able to meet that 50% greenhouse gas reduction requirement? That's question number one. Question number two is whether the corn ethanol new corn ethanol plants, those that are not grandfathered in under ISA, would those be able to meet the greenhouse gas reduction requirement that they have to meet
in order
to qualify against
proposed,
them?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. Our analysis shows in the proposed rule, you'll see this, that there are pathways that biodiesel can accomplish to get to the 50% reduction that's called for. And one of the things we're doing is soliciting comment on various pathways to enable biodiesel to move to a lower carbon footprint. We believe our technical analysis shows that they are doable, but one of the reasons we have comment is for that. Your second question, the answer is similar. For non-grandfathered, as you put it, new plants who come in, there are production technologies out there that could make new plants able to meet the requirements of this proposal as well. Again, this is a proposal to seek comment, but one of the things I want to stress is that we believe that for corn-based ethanol, which admittedly is a bridge. Someone who wants to invest in that now, there are things that can be done to make corn-based ethanol more sustainable as well. So you can look towards the future and realize that we're moving to next-generation fuel stocks, but you can also make the current generation, if you're beginning to invest in ethanol and corn-based ethanol, you can make that energy and greenhouse gas competitive as well.
And if I might add, Phil, the Farm Bill, as you know, creates opportunities for USDA to assist producers who want to make a transition and also to assist the development of new biorefineries that will take advantage of the research that Steve Chu is going to be financing. So what we're dealing with here is, I think, a fairly comprehensive approach.
Great, thank you. And we have a question then from the line of Gina Hamilton with the Coastal Journal. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm from Maine, and here in Maine we use about as much oil in home heating as we do in gasoline. There is a proposal to try to get on the biomass bandwagon by having stoves and pellets that use wood pellets and that sort of thing, woody biomass. But the IRS has not yet released information on which biomass stoves and boilers will qualify for their for their new credits. And I'm wondering, you know, since we're about halfway through the year at this point, if that can't be ramped up and when we can expect those things to come.
Well, let me first of all say that that there are, within USDA, obviously, grant programs that can assist communities to make that transition. And the question that you raise is precisely the reason why the President has directed the development of this interagency working group to basically evaluate whatever barriers or roadblocks might exist and see if there are ways in which they can be eliminated and reduced. It is, I think, important for us to take a look at all aspects of this, and what we've been doing in the past is we've been stovepiping all of this discussion with EPA doing its work, USDA doing its work, which may not have been integrated with the Department of Energy doing its research work. What the President is suggesting is the need for integration within these departments and then further coordination with the industry. So I suspect that the interagency working group will learn a lot about these rules, regulations, concerns, barriers, and we'll work with our colleagues in other cabinet departments and other agencies of government to try to reduce those barriers. So this is a good example of why it's important to have something like this.
But let me also add, if it turns out this is an issue with Treasury, we will certainly go to Treasury and see if we can get the decision expedited.
Great. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And we have a question now from the line of Martin Ross with Illinois Farm Week. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Kind of a two-part question. Number one, the USDA funding to help producers lower their on-farm energy consumption footprint. Is that going to factor into, accrue to ethanol's total scoring on footprint? And number two, the indirect land use issue. I know EPA is looking at that in analyzing the next moves on RFS. Basically, what kind of modeling and what kind of assumptions might be made in that direction?
Well, I'm happy, it's Lisa Jackson. I'm happy to answer the last question first and then turn it over to Tom. You know, the law calls for indirect land use to be part of the analysis, and so certainly the proposed rule includes that. I think you heard me mention that EPA is soliciting peer-reviewed scientific feedback to ensure that the rule, when it is finalized, includes the best available science. The life cycle analysis estimates for the greenhouse gas relate to the full fuel cycle. So our peer review is specifically looking at issues that have maybe gotten the most attention and concern by people who have been looking at the fact that this is indeed path-breaking work. It's going to be very important in terms of setting public policy going forward. We will be specifically peer reviewing the satellite data that's used to project future land use changes, the land conversion greenhouse gas emissions factors, the estimates of greenhouse gas emissions from foreign crops, the methods to account for variable timing of greenhouse gas emissions, and the issue of how our models are used together to provide overall life cycle greenhouse gas estimates. In closing, let me just say I'm very proud of, and I thank all my colleagues for the hard work we've done so far on this rule proposal, but we welcome additional scientific and public scrutiny of our work.
As it relates to USDA and its involvement, our responsibility is crafted and directed and shaped not just by this memorandum that the President has signed, but also obviously by the Farm Bill and the energy title of the Farm Bill. As it relates to specific operations, what Congress has directed USDA to do is to make available resources to farmers to first and foremost audit their activities on farm to determine if there are steps that could be taken by individual farm families to convert to renewable energy sources and to move away from a reliance on fossil fuel. Resources have already been provided under this program as we speak to farmers across the country to conduct these audits. Once the audits are finished, then they can make application to the EPA or to the USDA for additional resources to convert their operation. In other words, they can receive assistance from the government to take steps to embrace everything from additional biofuel opportunities to renewable energy sources for their operations. And so we are essentially a financing mechanism for these changes. First, doing the audit to determine what could be done and should be done. Then secondly, receiving assistance to actually implement the changes that the audit suggests. This is part of a very comprehensive effort that Congress has shaped and the President supports to encourage farmers to move away from a dependence on fossil fuel, which obviously will have an impact over time in terms of the carbon footprint of agriculture generally, which in relationship to other aspects of the economy is perhaps not as great as a power company or a major manufacturing concern.
And, Operator, we're going to have to make this next one the last question.
Okay, great. And that question comes from the line of Joe Eber with the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
I think my question was partly answered, but for Administrator Jackson, is am I correct that your proposed rule or a notice of proposed rule does say that international land use changes should be taken into account?
Yes, you are correct.
Not only global. And have you determined that, I know you said there are ways and there are pathways to achieve a production that is would be advantageous to climate, but have you also concluded that what is currently the production process for corn ethanol fails to meet the test? Am I correct on that?
No, that's not correct.
Okay. Tell us what's correct.
Well, what we've done is shown that the current processes for making ethanol, it, everything from how you generate the power that's put into the process to use of feedstock matters in terms of your carbon footprint. So I don't think that's news to anyone. Again, the idea here is to send a strong signal about what science says is the best way to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. That's what the law required us to do. And so this proposal lays out a number of pathways for us to include corn-based ethanol as today's future. But also it says that the proposal you'll see talks about the fact that ethanol is 16% better than gasoline with respect to that once you see it online today.
I'm sorry, did you say 15%? I didn't catch the percentage number.
16, 1/6.
1/6, thank you.